What is up, Hockey IQ listeners? I'm here to chat about our newest sponsor, Sensarena. Your brain is one of the most important parts of your body. Why not invest in a tool that allows you to train it? With Sensarena, athletes can gain a competitive edge using VR training. Players are able to go through a scenario thousands of times without having to step foot on the ice. No more waiting around for puck touches or perfect scenarios. Sensarena can enhance reaction time, decision-making, and multitasking abilities, making you the next MVP. I mean, if the LA Kings are using it, it's got to be good. With our promo code HockeyIQ, you receive $50 off an annual plan purchase. Head on over to Sensarena.com to check it all out.
On the Hockey IQ podcast, they would bring on Jill Plandowski, skating expert and definitely a mom extraordinaire. Three boys, all hockey players, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
Jeez. Okay. Well, this has got to be an awesome family time. And then your husband obviously works in hockey. So first off, can you get away from hockey? Is it possible?
It's tough. I'm probably the worst of all of them, actually. But no, it's a pretty busy hockey house if you like hockey. Between my husband scouting and coaching and myself and my three boys. The oldest is kind of on the outside. He just finished his junior B. He was his other, he loved school. That was his compete. So he's doing his MBA now. And he played junior B all through his first degree. But it was pretty busy when they were young and all playing AAA hockey. That's for sure.
Yeah. Three boys and three heirs. Clearly. You're a miracle worker. but getting into your own thing. So have you always been a skating coach? Has it been something you've always aspired to? Did you happen to just get into it? Like what would be your 30-second background into?
Well, I was a competitive figure skater, and when you're a figure skater, they often get you start coaching young. I think I've been coaching since I was 12. So they get you hooked pretty young. And from there, I think if you'd asked me if I was five, you'd say I would have said I was going to be a teacher. But I ended up doing a political science degree first, and then did a phys ed teaching degree. But even as a teenager, I was always asked to coach. A lot of the hockey dads knew I was a figure skater. And I just started coaching when I was a teenager doing hockey camps. But I did coach competitive figure skating for years, and along with the hockey. But I do have a skating background, but I'm a phys ed teacher. So I've coached all sports. And having three boys in 3 years, when I'd always done some power skating, but when my almost 22-year-old was four and showed up at the rink, all the dads are looking at me as, you're going to do this, aren't you? And I had done camp power skate, so I ended up switching my skates out and full-time hockey from then on.
Beautiful. And I love your stuff because, like, it's not like traditional power skating where it's three lines at the end and we're just going to go down and we're going to talk for 2-3 minutes and then go back down. And you only really get, like, maybe an access to that movement pattern, like, 5 to 10 times in 10 to 15 minutes. Like, your stuff is well beyond that. How did you evolve over time? Because I'm assuming you didn't just automatically jump to where you are today. And then the other thing that really fascinates me is how you use pucks so often. Like, I'm a huge proponent of that. That's where I think we're going, is puck-centric skating. And that's how we're actually going to develop it. So I'm curious how you've evolved over time.
It's hard. Well, it takes time and you have to really get to know what's important. But I feel like I have a good concept and knowledge of the game. And I think that's really important if you're going to transition from using your figure skating background to power skating for hockey. It's very different, and the balance point's different, the skating style's different, but there's a lot you can take from it. I was really lucky when we moved into Halifax. I worked at a hockey academy called Maritime Hockey Academy, and I got to do 3 times a week the skating, and I had really, really good groups. So I got to really experiment. They were kind of my guinea pigs. But you just kind of develop your own curriculum over time. And trust me, if I was going to do something that my boys didn't think was useful, I would be told very quickly, and my husband. But I think it's got to have a purpose. As a skating background, we're very technical, so I'm very visual. A lot of people will put skating through programs, whereas I can use the eye test. And I think it's got to make sense. If it's not something that can be used in a game, I'm not going to do it. There's lots of figure skaters that, or Instagram coaches, as you want to call them, that do a lot of fluff. To me, if it's not going to be used in a game, if I have like an NHL player, one of the first things they'll say is, show me how I use this in a game. So I have a bank of drills on my iPad and I can show them how they use that footwork or movement in a game. So I think I love to break things down. It's like a puzzle to me. I love to look, someone sent me their, my husband's friend sent me their son's skating yesterday. And I love kind of figuring out the puzzle of how to make the movements more efficient. So I just kind of slowly started, and over time you kind of get your curriculum, but I kind of look at it as more as details and habits as opposed to drills. I focus on the details and habits that I know are important to that a player will need at the next level, whatever level that may be. So I think if you focus on details and habits, that's better than just focusing on drills. As far as the pucks, once again, it's way more, hockey is played with a puck and it's way more fun. I'd say, other than stride mechanics, balance slides, and strides, maybe some of the backer skating, I use all pucks. So it's probably about 80%. And I think almost, and all of those things, we will get to pucks, but some things you have to learn, the footwork. And once, as soon as they get it, though, they've got a puck. But pucks are more fun. Players want to have a puck.
Definitely. I love having pucks. Just no matter how old you are, just a little tyke or older, like, God, give it to me sooner.
It's so much easier without a puck. So as soon as you can get the puck on their stick, it makes it more sense and more game-like. And it's shocking, even at like a U18 level, how difficult it is for a kid to skate from one end to the other and keep a puck on their backhand with one hand on their stick. And it's I can do it, and my puck skills, my boys would say they suck, but I can do it. I can skate from one end to the other, keep a puck on my backhand. But you know why? It's because it's my arm action. My arm action is always efficient, and my arms are always doing the same thing. And so I can always keep a puck on my backhand, so I don't have to look at it. And then I can go from one hand to two hand flawlessly. I don't have to make adjustments. But a lot of kids will skate and their arm will cross over their body, or it goes down by their knee. So there's always having to be adjustments made. Whereas your arms are efficient and consistent, the puck's going to be where you want it to be.
All right, plenty to unpack there.
I talk fast, I know.
I like this a lot. So there was, well, we'll start with the one before that I'll probably forget the easiest. That you rattled off like three things super quick. I was like slide, grot, slide.
Balance, glide, and stride.
Balance, yes, but balance, glide, and stride. If you wouldn't mind, just I'm not that bright. Clearly you are. Help a brother out.
So I actually don't post a lot of stride work because I find it's almost like using another language, and you don't want to. I guess I just that's kind of what you do. So I kind of keep my stride stuff to myself, but I do a lot of it, and that's probably what I take the most pride in. If I was going to take you on the ice for the first time, it's really important to get balanced and be on the proper spot on the blade. And once that's achieved, anything else can be built off of it. So I would do a lot of proper positioning and 2-in-1 foot gliding. So it gets you balanced, and then we do lots of gliding, straight line, curve, changing from outside to inside, just to feel the sweet spot of the blade, because that's where you want to be balanced, and that's where your power is, and that's where everything comes from. And then I would work on some striding action, so like lower body stride and work on the stride mechanics. But for all that stuff, we wouldn't use a puck. But it's really important to make sure that you're balanced on the right spot of the blade, and just feeling where you need to be each time you push.
I love this, and I think it's super underrated. Like, there's a great book, The Inner Game of Tennis. Like, it's one of our book recs on our website, and I just think it's like one of the most fascinating. It's the idea of kind of like that feel-based learning, but you have to develop an actual feel for it. Like, I don't know how many kids that like, I don't know, maybe you have this, or maybe it's just my experience. Like, sometimes they'll come out for a skating lesson of sorts, and they're like, okay, well, where do I put my foot now? And then what am I doing here? How am I doing with my shoulder? And it's like, we can't break down every technical thing of like, you're doing. You need to feel kind of what your body tells you to do. Here's like maybe a foundational piece, but other than that, like, feel it.
As a skater, you'd have, you know, you'd be at your long axis, you'd have one push to do two large circles, and so you had to get you had to be lined up perfectly. You had to have that right shin angle to keep the speed, and your balance was just had to be bang on in order to keep your speed up. So I guess I've learned, I call that whole free speed, like how to generate speed with just one push. And it all comes from being lined up properly on the blade. So it's, so I do a lot of work on that sort of stuff, but like I said, I don't post as much of that because it takes too much time to explain. I like just to show, oh, this is what we're working on, but this is probably what I spend the most time on. Is just making sure balance, glide, and stride.
All right. So let me see if I can summarize this well, if I'm learning properly here. Okay. So we'll start with balance. So balance would be more of like front to back of your foot. Like, where does the blade
balls
hit?
The feet. Making sure you're on the right balls of the feet for skating forward. So you're on that fast part of the blade. And then if you're lined up, you can actually start moving without even moving, without moving your body parts. For backwards, it'd be completely different because you want more blade on the ice, so your posture changes. But just making sure you have that proper skating posture, that you have a good shin angle. A lot of people think, bend your knees, bend your knees. Well, I want you to bend your ankles because your speed's in your ankles. So if you can get that positive shin angle, have that nice forward tilt so that when you stretch back, you've got a nice full stride, toes turned out 45 degrees, like all that sort of stuff. So I think that's really important. If you're lined up, once guys feel that their posture is right, everything kind of grows off of that.
Posture. It's like the most important thing in life. How do you posture in life? How do you posture on the rink? How do you posture in your skating stride?
It's for your shot. It's for your pass. It's for your stride. It's for everything. So it's important for all parts of hockey, not just skating.
All right. And then with glide, I would imagine it would be like left and right on your actual edges.
You're knowing, feeling comfortable on your outside edges, your inside edges, and your flats. So when both edges are on the ice, it looks like a train track. It's your flats. So just feeling comfortable using all your edges, gliding straight line and on a curve, all that sort of stuff that you do with you first, just to make sure you're on the right spot of the blade.
All right. So if we're going into a turn and we want to carry speed, we want to kind of get towards the middle of our blade. If we're too much into our toes, we'll probably cut the circle short. And if we're too much in the heels, we'll either go too long or we'll immediately stop if we're like super far back.
It depends on what type of turn. But yeah, you don't want to go on your heels because you'll ride back and then you're not on the fast part of your blade to push off of again. So you want to keep your weight on the balls of the feet so that when you turn, you're in a good spot to push again. The more efficient, the better. So I just do lots of that stuff to begin with. And like I said, that stuff I wouldn't do much with pucks. I would once we were working on stride and I want to put it all together, we would definitely use pucks at that point. But all of the edge stuff I do, we always have pucks, even little kids.
I feel like that's a great way to also like challenge players. Like, for me, I sometimes have a group that's very wide ranging in skating ability. I've got players that are unbelievable. You know, I'm adding like pucks to challenge them. So like they're doing skating drills with two pucks, which is really challenging. And then I'll have another player who has no pucks and they're just getting down like the basic fundamentals. Again, I think it's a great way to challenge as well. Like, the different levels of talent that you may have out there. I think you have more elite players, so they probably get it a little bit faster.
If we're learning a new type of footwork, I'm trying to challenge them and they're a pretty good skater, then I might give it a sec without the puck, but I don't even think about it anymore because the pucks are on as soon as they come on. We'll often do an edge warm up with pucks, and then we'll get into some stride work, and then we'll kind of tackle whatever theme we're going to do for the day. I think it's important. Yeah, the pucks are really important. And then trying to sequence what we're working on so that it can be used in a game, I think is also very important. If we're working on just like a simple C step, well, that's lovely, but that's not how it's used in a game. So I would sequence with crossovers in and crossovers out, because that's kind of the next step. That would be my version of game, like for like a skill coach for the skating, would be making it, sequencing it so that we can use it how you would use it in a game. And often it's with crossovers.
Beautiful. I would love to go back to another thing you mentioned around shin angle. Can you break that down for the non-technical folks that are listening in here? And you mentioned a great quote, like speed is in your ankles. Like everyone talks about knee bend, but really it's all in the ankles. Super critical.
So when you skate, if you're standing straight up and there's no knee bend and no shin, it'll be like just straight up and down. But what I want is you to push your knees over your toes, so you'll feel it in your laces. But you really, the deeper the shin angle, for me, the better. You want your knees over your toes, and that puts more pressure on the blade. When you're gliding, you'll just start moving without even having to do anything. But if I, so when I'm coaching, I like to use triangles. So if you look at a skater from behind and their leg comes out, it makes a triangle, and then it comes back in under the body or under the hip. And then the other leg. So it almost looks like you're making a triangle. So I'll draw a triangle for young kids so that when they're not with me, they'll have something to help them recall. What was that lady saying again about how to push? And if you look at a triangle, it forces your toe out to the side, which allows you to use the whole side of your blade. Because young kids skate in straight lines, so their blades just go straight back. So if you open up your hip and make a triangle, it gives them a visual for pushing. And the same thing with the triangle with the shin angle. If you push your knee forward, it I'll show them how that makes a triangle. So I'm like, get your shins and knees over your toes, and it makes a triangle. And I've got a couple of nice just pictures of all the different triangles. And then your arms, I also like them to match, and they also make triangles. So it just kind of helps kids when they're not with me, just to kind of give them a visual. Like I find, I don't know if you probably find this, but kids today versus even like when we grew up, we didn't have iPads or we didn't have Instagram or video. So we were very visual. So when the like the gym, I was a phys ed teacher, we would do tons of mirror match games. And just if we wanted to learn something new, we had to visualize it. I find kids today are missing that. Their mirror match is not as good as it used to be. So, and I asked my friend who's a biomechanist at a kinesiology prof, and she said it's actually a thing. Kids' brains don't fire like they used to. They almost need to see an iPad to make it work. Do you find that as well?
Yeah, video is a lot more powerful. I mean, I started coaching when we started getting this stuff. Like I was like the last generation didn't really have good video of themselves, but I've seen how it's evolved and like yeah, for me, I'm like I can almost kind of need to see things like, but it's a lost art of just being able to visualize it in your head.
Yeah, so if I'm coaching and I'm like, I'm really giving a good demo, and I'll see the kids, I'm like, what the heck? I know I don't look like that. So then I bring them over to the board. So I'm like, no, this is what I want you to see. Because I have a big bank of players doing a game. And then all of a sudden they'll be able to do it. It's like they need that step of seeing it on an iPad or seeing themselves. So it's really powerful. So I'm videoing nonstop. And that's why on some of the videos I put out, you can hear me talking, because they're just, I go home and watch every night, because there's no way as a coach you can, if you have eight guys, you can't catch everything. So if you're just constantly videoing, you can go back and see what they got or need a little bit more work on. So Yeah, it's super powerful.
Yeah, I find that's like a super critical thing these days, and like Live Barn helps out a ton. Personally, like just being able to watch things back again, and like you can just track one player and watch them throughout, like how are they developing, what how are they going about like solving their problems, are they on the right track, maybe they need a little more help. Or just like a great example to share with the team of like, oh, see how you went through this and this and that, and boom, you got it. Like, or just like sending a clip to a player, I find that that's super impactful and much quicker learning rather than having to have like a big talk or speech. Like, just send the video and have them noodle on it.
I think it's important to use every kid learns a little bit differently. So some need to see visuals, some need keywords, some, and you have to almost like give them step, 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 and keep repeating it as you're coaching. Yeah, some need to be manipulated, like you need to move them to feel in that position. So you have to get, and that's what I enjoy. I love learning how to adapt, and I guess that's my phys ed background. I had a strong background in adapted physical education, and you just know that everyone's going to learn differently, and it's just kind of figuring out what works for each kid.
Love this. All right, I got plenty more. You're an unbelievable quote. Love these things. So you're talking about striding back versus striding like away from you, like sideways almost. And like from my understanding and peanut brain is like as you're starting, it's good to push back, but then once you're trying to be at top speed and efficient, you want to basically go to the side. Just based on how far like you're able to glide within the stride itself. So am I on the right track there?
Yeah, it's going to be more narrow at the start if you watch someone from behind on the first three strides, kind of like the grip launch strides on the first, because you don't want to glide very much on your first two, three strides. You just want to grip the ice and launch out. So it's quite narrow. But it does fan out and it ends up being about a 45 degree angle for the push. But you want to stay, you'll be nice and low, and it ends up looking like a triangle from behind. But it does start quite narrow for forward skating, yes.
Yeah, we're skating not backwards. Like we're not pushing our leg straight back when we're at speed. Like that's super inefficient. Like if you're going to be an efficient skater, you need to actually be pushing, like thinking like to your exact right or to your exact left. Obviously, your body won't allow you to do that fully, but like that's the general idea, and you actually go faster, further, more efficient, which is kind of strange. Like you don't think about that if you're running. It's
No, but when
skating.
you run, your toes are facing straight. When you skate, your toes facing to the side. So that's why your arms can't go front to back either. They need to come over to load because it's a single leg load skating for it. So that opposite arm comes across to load up that leg. Because the more you have behind that glide leg, the faster you're going to go. That's why it's no good having your arm just kind of flopping in the wind out to the side. If you keep it nice and efficient, it will actually help you load the leg, the glide leg, and you'll skate faster. It's just like dropping, a bowling ball versus a feather. Like there's more weight behind the bowling ball, so it's going to drop faster. So the more weight you can get behind that leg, the faster you'll glide. And having that nice shin angle helps load it.
That is a great analogy. I've always said like you just need to feel like your upper body weight is on your lower body. Like that's the way I've gone about getting people to feel their posture, which I don't know why, but just saying that, like I will try a skating drill, say that, and then suddenly they're all immediately better at skating. It was like the biggest epiphany of like light bulb moment going off. And fortunately, I was able to have that early in my career, but like, holy smokes, just that little piece and like nothing technical, and it just works.
I know sometimes we overcomplicate things, and to me, it always has to make sense. If it doesn't make sense, then there's something missing. But yeah, skating forward, you want to get as much weight behind that leg as possible, and then you'll glide faster.
All right, moving back a little bit. So arm efficiency. So you talked about not going back and forth. You'd actually need to go side to side. But then even before that, when we first started this conversation, you talked about like not crossing. I want to say going too far over. So I'm going to say not crossing the midline. Is that kind of what was referred
Yeah,
to?
you want to load up that leg. If it gets too far, it goes the other direction and it's counterproductive. But if you, I always say back, I try not to say side to side because this is the motion you'll get with the elbows out to the side. But
And then
if
we're
you,
baling hay.
yes, but if you think of taking your shoulder and just having it lined up with your ear, that actually opens your hip. So just having it, look, I'll have to stand up. So just having this pull back and then this come into the middle. So just here, and then it puts your hand in a good position to keep that puck on the backhand too. And then your arms, if they match, just like when you swim, your arms match, or when you run, your arms match. Skating, because I know you have a stick, but they can still match so that one's not doing something completely different. Like you wouldn't run with one arm flopping out and the other one in front of you. So if you tell kids just to try to make their arms match, they'll be way more efficient, and it puts your hands in or your arms in a better position to help you. You don't want them be doing something so off that you can't go from two hands to one hand quickly. Like you want to play the game. So the more simple you can make your arm action, the better. The other thing that I tell people is just think of basic biomechanics. If you're spinning and your arms are really, really wide, you'll spin slow. But if you bring your arms in, you speed faster. You spin faster. When your arms and your legs come in, you naturally speed up. So you don't want your arm action too big and wide. If you keep it closer, you actually speed up. It's like a track coach telling you to run up a hill. They wouldn't tell you to have your arms go slow and wide and flop in the wind. They'd have you pump your arms. Get you to go faster when things come in. Even when your leg, if you can learn to tap into the speed you get from putting intention on that after your push, bringing it in with intention, you actually speed up. That's where your speed comes from for me, like when things come into the body. That make
All right,
sense?
making sure our elbows are not out as we're skating. They're a little more in, and then you can still get that shoulder action and the arms act like the activation as we're going along.
Yeah, I've got some, I can't show you, but I've got some great videos of like Connor McDavid, and I study his arm action a lot. And his arms help him. They load up his glide leg. His hand comes after his stick hand comes in by his hip and it ends up in front of him. And then he goes to two hands quickly. So it comes into to here. It doesn't do this. Young kids often their stick hand goes ends up down by their knee. And what that does is it puts their hips up high and shortens their stride. It puts them off balance because their hand's down below their knee. And it makes it hard to shoot or pass from that position. So just keeping it a little closer, making sure they match a little bit, it just kind of helps everything.
Arm action. Now we're getting some serious skating detail. What's the best way to train your legs? Train your upper body. What's the best way to train your upper body? Train your lower body.
Yeah, for sure. It's often arms, when I'm looking at a skater for the first time, that's usually what catches my eye first. Just if they're using their arms to help them, and if their stick hand gets too low. If it gets too low, the hips get up high and the stride shortens. So that's a combination of getting the stick up a little higher so it's in a good position to use it for shooting or passing, but also getting into the shin a little bit more, and that those ankles are so important. That ankle rocker mobility is so important. So it's a combination of those two things. But usually, if I see someone for the first time, their arms are what catch my
Yeah, don't be a wild child.
eye.
That's also a development piece, right? Like, I feel like as kids go through puberty, some of them get a little wild and lanky out there with their extremities. So that would be a big piece.
I have to tune up my own kids that all the time. They're always changing. Even kids that I have weekly, like from week to week, sometimes you're like, what is that? Or if I young kids I don't have in the summer, I think it would be a little hypocritical if I tell kids to take the summer off and be multi-sport athletes, but then have ice for them. So I don't go lower than U15 in the summer because I really want them to do other sports. But when they'll come back, usually we need a few sessions on just balance, glide, and stride, and just kind of getting tuned up because a lot often they've grown, and it doesn't take them long. They get back into it really quickly.
All right, I've got a few more things I want to touch on here. First off, eyelets. So as you're tying up your skates, what are your thoughts? Should we go down one? Should we go down two? Should we skip the second from the top, do the top one? Like,
It's one of the first things I look at if it's the first time with a player, and I'll always suggest to maybe come off the leave the just go to the second eyelet or loosen them, because if you don't have ankle mobility, you can't get a positive shin angle. So a few years ago, I remember a player who plays for Winnipeg, Morgan Barron, he's from Halifax. I remember thinking his were a little too stiff, and then he loosened the top eyelid, and then he had more mobility. It's pretty important because if it's too tight, you can't get to that position I'm trying to get you to. So it takes a couple skates, but usually or a couple sessions. But once they feel that ankle mobility and the ability to push better with it, then they won't go back.
yeah, I find the ankle strength itself is usually the missing piece there. Like at first, it's the development of the ankle strength, and that may take a few sessions, but once it's at an acceptable level, it's a
And
massively leap.
I think it's from I made my own kids or encouraged them from the time they were 5, 6 to do their own skates, because I find a lot of the parents, often the dads, they just tie them so tight when they're young, so the kids get used to that feeling. And I think it's important as soon as kids can tie, skates almost tie themselves these days. They're so stiff, some of them, like, it's not like they need to be super tight. So I think as soon as kids can tie their own skates, the better. And then they get it, so it's more comfortable. Mine are pretty loose. People would be like, what? But I've got good ankle mobility in mine because they're not super tight. You want stability and mobility, but you need stability for sure.
Yeah, I remember hearing a story of or reading a story on Mario Lemieux. Like, he used to basically be able to kick his skates off after practice. Like, they were that loose. So
Wow.
I remember as a kid, I would go out to stick and puck, and I would just not tie my skates at all. I just toss them on and just go for a wheel, which I found super beneficial, like finding my edges and then also just like building that ankle strength and mobility. And I found that to be unbelievably helpful. So back when I used to do personal lessons, which I don't do anymore, that was one of the things I would do, is we would do skating without the skates tied up, and the kids always, look like Bambi the first time out. But after three or four sessions, we don't finish the session that way. We usually just do the first 5, 10 minutes, but it clicks for them, and then they're going loose. We're going down eyelets, and you can see just dramatic improvement via the equipment and
Oh, for
improved
sure.
skill
Equipment.
via that.
There's so much out there too of ankle mobility exercises you can do at home. Like if there's any ankle issues, it's something that you can work on so easily at home. It's just a lot of just moving those ankles. So there's lots out there for free if anyone needs issues with their ankles. And I'll get them to skate one of the first sessions and get them down low and see if they can sit on their heels. And if they fall back, usually that's a tell sign they need some work on their ankles. The other thing with skates too is sometimes kids' skates are just too sharp. I'm trying to get them to slide stop or punch, and if they're like too sharp, it's like jarring kind of on the ice. So often also I have to get kids to take their sharpening down one or two.
There's something I haven't discussed, but just like sharpening. I remember as a kid, I went super, I think it was 3/8, which is way too sharp for me. I moved to a half, and it's maybe tougher in the corners, but you get those like micro movements of like you're sliding, or like you're able to roll the edge a lot easier.
Well, if you're trying to do punching, which I find I do a lot more punching in the last like 5 years, and slide stop, like there's so many ways to incorporate it into a game, because when you slide, everything comes under the body and you can push off without crossing. So anytime you can open up and push off without crossing, the better. So if your skates are too sharp, it makes it hard to do those movements. So usually just bring them down. I'd say most junior players are 5/8, and in the summer they would go less. I'm about trying to do 3/4, but a lot of the pros are just 1 inch. So it's important to make sure your skates aren't too sharp. And in the summer, like, I don't think I did. I'm on 4 to 6 hours a day, and I think I sharpened them once. I don't like sharp skates. So just making sure their skates, and a lot of people, the skate sharpeners will say, "Oh, well, he's light. We got to go 3/8." And I kind of blow that theory up because I'm
Yeah.
not. So it's that's not really the case. You just want to make sure that they're not too sharp so that they can do some of those different types of stops and punching turns.
All right, I'm gonna hit you with a quick hitter here. So you often hear about skaters that skate like in the ice versus on the ice. What's your two cents on that?
Think you want to be on the ice to glide. You don't want, if you're digging into the ice, your body's working harder than it needs to. So if you're on top of the ice and you're gliding, it's easier on your body and more efficient if you're talking about gliding.
Yeah, I find it crazy because you have to talk about like players, like, oh yeah, even at the NHL, like, oh, he's a player who skates in the ice rather than on the ice. I'm like, I'm not
Oh.
sure that's how that works, but I'm just
No.
assuming you're meaning like they probably don't have the best glide, is what you're actually saying.
Yeah, no, you don't want to be digging into the ice. It's just even, and that goes back to the skate sharpening. When I move mine down, my back hurt a lot less. Like, you're just digging into the ice. It's like a snow plow pulling the snow along. You want to be on top of the ice, and yeah, you don't want to be in the ice.
Yes. Next piece, opening your body into the turn. So I think of this as kind of like motocross, like the head and the shoulders turn first, and then the rest of the bike and body go second. Just want to dive into that concept of like the puck moves first. So that's like why I think one of the big things with getting pucks out there is like the puck moves first and then we follow it. And then also like it's like puck, head, shoulders, and then the rest.
Like the song, head, shoulders, knees, and toes. Yeah, if you're turning, if you already know you're going to go in that other direction, if turning your head and your shoulders helps you initiate that turn. And it's funny because it, or not funny, but when you're back to my skating coaching days to see which way kids would rotate, you send them down a line and have them glide, and you call their name, and whatever way they naturally rotate, that's the way they would spin or jump. But that turning the head and shoulders, they'll start coming back down the line, coming back down just by turning their head and their shoulders. So it can save a couple crossovers too. If I don't turn my head and shoulders, I'm gonna have to do this wide, big swoop. So it's a great way to initiate the turn.
Yeah. Initiate the turn. That's a good way to say it. Like, how do you get started within the turn? Because usually the rest will follow.
Yeah.
Same with the stop. Like, if you're doing a stop, like getting your head around to where you want to go, getting your shoulders around to where you want to go is super, super important.
Yes, I agree. It's often the missing piece to a proper turn. It's just making sure that the eyes and the shoulders turn first.
All right, last piece I have here, and then I'll open it. So, what did we miss? Because I know you've got a much better brain on this than I do. Strides under fatigue. Like, what does fatigue normally do to a stride, and like, how does it break down over the course of a shift?
Fatigue will cause the hips to get up high and the stride to shorten. It's hard to stay down into your ankles when your muscles get tired, and just think the knee bend lessens and the hips get up high, so the posture goes. I think you should be able to skate, blow out your shift and then get off the ice. And I'm not a big fan of bag skates because all the hard work I do just goes out the window. Like, there's so many ways to get good conditioning in with playing shinny or, other ways than just bagging them, because all that muscle memory of correction goes by the wayside.
Another reason why bag skates should never be in hockey. Like, it's so terrible. Like, the opportunity cost, the breaking down of your player's strides, like not enjoying the game as much. Like, there's so many reasons.
My husband said the year they won, he won an NCAA championship in 91. And that year, he said they probably played more shinny than any other year ever. And that's how they got their conditioning in, by playing shinny and having fun. And I just always remember that he said that year they probably played more shinny than any other year. It's just, there's so many other ways to get conditioning. And there's so many ways to do other things than just to bag skate them, because the skating gets awful. And I'm for, you've got to be able to have good posture for shift length for sure, and have conditioning to be able to do that repetitively throughout the game. But just the old bag skates up and down the ice is just awful to watch.
Yeah, it's well, yeah, awful. That we'll leave it there. We can go much further, but yes. So strat under fatigue, hips are coming up, posture breaks down, and we're undoing everything that we've worked on if we bag skate them. So don't do it.
I agree.
All right. So we've covered a lot of ground. Is there anything that we missed that's like a key piece? Like, maybe it's like some epiphanies you've had over your career, or key things within the skating stride.
It's funny because I tell kids, obviously, I know what skills look for probably more than anyone, having lived with one for this long. Under the umbrella of skating, when someone's scouting you, obviously they're going to look at your posture and how things move off your posture, your arms, your legs, your return. I think what almost one of the next things, besides skating and posture and all that a scout would look for, is how you cross your feet. You're going to cross your feet hundreds of times in a game through crossovers. Every time you turn, you cross out of it. You sequence. If I'm going to do a C-step, I'm going to cross. I'm going to do my C-step and I'm going to cross out of it. Punch, you're going to cross out of it. Think of McDavid coming down. He does these bursts of speeds, crossovers, gets wide, weight shift, and then goes the other way, cross, cross, cross. So the way we cross our feet, to me, is one of the most important details and habits that I coach.
All right. You can't just leave it that open. So what are you teaching within like how you cross your feet? What's a good way of crossing our feet if we're doing it so often?
So the most important part is to make sure the ball of the foot or the toe leads into the circle. If you look at any picture of NHL players crossing their feet, it looks like their toe's sneaking over. The heel never leads. If the heel leads, the back leg will slip straight back. So you're missing out on all that power of the second push. So I do a lot of outside edge gliding and work, and I think I have posted a few outside edge work or glide work, but what that's for is crossing over and making sure when a player crosses out of, does like a full ice turn, there's going to be probably a little bit of a punch and the head and the shoulders have to turn, but the way the foot crosses determines how fast you get up ice. If your foot goes wide and faces the boards, you're going to have to do a couple crossovers. But if you get your toe facing up ice, you're going to get there much faster. And often someone will send me a clip and they're like, he's just kind of a little slow in the game. First thing I look for is how they cross their feet. Or if they have some internal rotation, like a little bit of a knock knee kind of, need to work on their hips. Often that toe goes wide and the back leg slips back. So it affects more than just your stride. And yeah, the way you cross your feet's a pretty big one for me.
Oh no, you open a Pandora's box. Knock knee. What do we got going there?
That's usually, it looks like it's at the knees, but often it stems from the hips. So it's usually working on your posterior chain and working on the hips. I can't do all of that on ice, but I can help a player feel and know what it feels like to be lined up properly, so that to try to avoid that rotation. But often it comes from, it's a lot of work. It can be fixed, but it's a lot of work. And no one's ever going to look perfect because everyone's bodies are built differently. I'm never going to say everyone's skating is going to look the same. My three kids look different. But you have to just kind of maximize what you're given. And so for Knock Kneed, it's you got to do a lot of hip work in the gym and being aware on the ice and working on exercises to help, and it can improve.
All right, so just for those that do not know what Knock Knee is, if you wouldn't mind trying to explain that to a fifth grader.
So when your knees, when you push and you see the knee turn in, and so there's like a bend in the stride, that's what I see when someone's knocking it. There's always like a little rotation in, the knees turn in when you push, but often it's from not opening the hip enough when you push. So the hips are really tight. So if you work on your hips and that posterior chain, like I'm a phys ed teacher, but I'm not a professional off-ice trainer. But if I have a kid and I know they work with a trainer, like we'll talk about it and they'll work on it and then I'll work on it on the ice. And it just helps so that you get the full stride so that you're not turned in at the knee when you push.
Yeah, for me, I always think of it like the foot kind of like flares out. So
It
it's
flares out because the knee goes in. And
yeah.
then think about it, when the foot's flailed out, when you go to cross, it does a wide swoop instead of having the toe come close to the foot when you're crossing. So it affects crossing and pivoting a lot. So
Yeah,
it's
it's definitely a lot slower, like initiating like crossovers because it's like centripetal force. It's like you talked about earlier, like if you're in tight, it's a lot faster and it's so far out that it makes it a
yeah, you
lot
don't want to do
slower.
a big wide swoop. You want to keep those. I got to go to the BioSteel, was in Halifax a couple weeks ago, so I went quite a few times to watch, and I just was watching how the guys cross their feet and what they their sequencing and what they do in a game, because every guy has, like most of those NHL players have, two or three go-to moves they'll do to get up and down the ice, and so it's kind of neat to see. And I was just watching, like Crosby's feet are so efficient, like David's feet are so efficient. It's kind of cool to watch.
Yeah, it's amazing, especially those highest levels.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that we missed, or just like some epiphanies that you remember of like, oh, this was a light bulb moment for me?
It's amazing that, you know, some people will say, well, what does it take to be a good skater? And it's amazing. You can have a player and you can do one session with them and they retain it and they never have to fix it. It's rare, but it can happen. And then you'll get another player who you might do the same thing every week and it's not changing and you don't see them changing. So to me, it comes down to if it's the kid's thing. Like my husband always says, like, if you read once a week, who's going to be better? The kid that loves to read and reads 5 times a week, or the kid that reads one time a week. So parents always want their kid to be, you know, give them opportunities. But for me, it's the kids have to want to get better and see the value in it. And I'll say, you know, if I gave you a video hack and you're going to beat all your buddies, you just have to remember it when you get home. But I'm going to tell you what it is. And they're like, oh, yeah, I'll remember that. But then I'll say, I'm giving you skating hacks. Like, these are the things that are going to help you be a really good skater forever. But you just have to remember what I say. And that's more for young kids. The older guys, they're with me because they know that that's what they need. But for a young kid, like, the more they actually think about it and apply what I'm saying to them when they're not with me, the better they'll get and they'll be the better skater.
Yeah, I feel like that's the tough part. Like from the younger kids to the older kids, and like how do you teach and help retain? Like that's such an important difference. Just like most kids are just mimicking at the youngest ages, and then at the older age, and okay, we can start talking concepts and getting more philosophical a little bit with it.
Yeah, for sure. So it's a lot goes into it, but it's just like anything in life, the kids got to care and want to get better. And if they apply what you're telling them and you make it fun, and then I think you can see improvement really quickly. So it's that's always a big one too. You just have to care and want to get better.
That's what matters most in the long run, right?
Yeah, no, it's gonna be fun. Even power skating, we can make it fun. And yeah, no, it's all of those little things, concepts of how to get free speed, crossing your feet, like those are all those details that I think are important that some just hockey coaches who don't have a skating background might not be able to teach or might understand, but it's harder for them to relay because they don't feel it themselves, maybe. But yeah, I love that I get to go on the ice as much as I want and help coach all age levels. I get just much as joy out of a U11 player as I do an NHL player. And I try to go to as many local games as I possibly can of the kids that I coach because I think it's important for me to see how they're skating in a game. But also, it's, they like to see me there and they get really excited and proud that I'm watching them. And, I think that's important. They need to know that you care and that you want to help them.
Wow. Can't think of a better way to end this episode. Jill, thank you so much for coming on. I know it's all hockey, 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 but thanks for taking all of this expertise and sharing it with us, because I can't imagine if someone listens to this that they will be a worse skater or a worse teacher of skating after just taking not even an hour here to discuss this. This was fantastic. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
That concludes this week's episode. Thanks for joining us here at Hockey IQ. If you haven't already, take a quick moment to hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, and drop a review. If you want to be a great teammate, even recommend us to a friend. You can follow us at Hockey's Arsenal on Twitter and Instagram. Check out the website, hockeysarsenal.com, where you can subscribe to the weekly newsletter. You won't regret it. Catch your beauts here next week for a brand new episode.